Now, being the second Wednesday of the month, it's our legal hour, and we've got Con from Hutchinson Legal. Welcome, Con.
Morning, Alan. Good to be here.
Great to have you along. Now, we did talk to you. We sent you away with a bit of homework.
Yes, you asked me about whether a person who's applied for bail, because they've been accused of a crime, they've been charged with crime, and they've applied for bail and been refused, can they apply again?
Now, and also in that, while you're just checking it, it's also if a person is already in custody because they've been found guilty of a crime and then they've had a second, not a trial.
Well, there's like that, they've ordered a retrial.
Ordered a retrial.
So there was a problem with the first decision.
Yep.
And so, the appeal has been successful and ordered a retrial.
Yep.
And then the person who's... in jail still, pending the hearing, applying for bail. So if a person applies for bail, can they and is refused, can they reapply? Generally, no, can't. But yes, and it's going to be there's a lot of depends here. Yes, if there are obvious, if there are new facts or circumstances that wasn't available at that first hearing where the bail was refused.
Right, yep.
If the first refusal was where the person didn't have legal representation, they might get a second go at it with a lawyer.
Yep.
And if the first refusal was by a bail justice. So that's usually the position for an ordinary offence. Now, I've got to say, I'm not a criminal lawyer, so any criminal lawyers out there, you can correct me if you need to, but generally speaking, that's...
And we should say that every bit of advice you give is...
Yeah, that's right. You've got to always get advice for your circumstances. If it's just an ordinary standard offence, so the less serious offences, the courts are going to focus on the risk... is a person going to reoffend? Now, generally speaking, for most of the ordinary crime, the there's a default presumption that you get bail, right? Because the jails can't hold everyone that's accused and charged.
Yep.
You can't put them all in jail just because they're accused and charged. They haven't been proven guilty yet. So you start from the presumption of innocence. Generally, you should get bail. But as the crimes get more serious and these other factors get looked into about... whether there are risks to the public of letting this person out on bail, and that depends on the type of crime and the seriousness of the crime. So if there's a serious offence that the person's charged with, and that's, your murders and your and manslaughters and things like that, you need to be able to show a compelling reason to get the bail. And
can I just ask you, Con, when you say a compelling reason... Now, does it have to be the same reason you've been ordered a retrial on, or can it be another compelling reason altogether? Do they correlate or not?
You're testing me out here. The compelling look. If you had a compelling reason and you still got refused, I don't think you can use the same compelling reason again because it wasn't compelling the first time. It's not going to be compelling. So something needs to have changed or shifted. In when you're trying again, because we're assuming here you've had a go and you've been refused.
Yep.
So you need something new. For the highest risk of serious offences, you've got exceptional circumstances test as well. So you need a compelling reason and exceptional circumstances. Sometimes that's like health related. You've got to prove you need medical treatment. You need to go in. You can't be locked away. You need to be out getting your medical treatment, things like that. So the court is always asking on bail, will the person come back to court? You know, are they a flight risk? Are they going to disappear? Are they going to, a famous person jumped on a yacht to Greece, somehow got to Greece, put a wig on, but still got caught over there. So will the person appear in court? Will they reoffend while they're out on bail? And obviously everyone's got heightened sensitivities around that because there's been so many reports of people out on bail committing new, fresh offences and crimes against people. Will they interfere with witnesses? What's the risk of that? Because, you can't have them making threats to the witnesses if they're out on bail and got access to them. And will they endanger anyone? So depending on those, that's what they look at in deciding bail.
Yep.
And so if you've already had a go and you've bail refused back to jail, you're really going to have to find something quite exceptional, quite different, or completely new evidence becomes available that you didn't have when you were refused.
Yep.
So it's always about, first, whether the bail application will even be allowed, and secondly, whether that legal test for release is strong enough.
Yep.
But in serious cases, serious offences, it's very hard, very high bar to jump to say, you know. So you've already, I think if you've been sort of found guilty the first time, doesn't mean you'll be found guilty the second time on a retrial, but it means that there's a lot of evidence against you. There's a lot of evidence that's there, and it's maybe some technical reason as to why there needs to be a retrial. It's going to be very hard to get bail for that kind of person.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to be back with more. And we're going to talk about possums.
Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, Colin, we're going to talk about a discussion. Now, you talk to some, possums seem to very much divide the population. Some, and I know they're protected, so I'm not suggesting anyone should do anything to them, but some people would really like to rid half of the possums out of the world. And that's what happens. Whether you like it or not, some people fear that. Others, and we know they're protected, and others find them as lovely little critters. So tell us about the legal law with possums.
Okay, possums, well, you're absolutely right. They are definitely protected. But then what's the difference in your possums? What's your most common possum? What do you think? What have you got?
Oh, I don't know. I just thought possums were possums.
Oh, well, there's a bushy tail. The ones that sort of make that horrible noise at night.
Yeah.
It's like some cat or dog barking. Oh.
Yeah.
All right. So
keep talking.
Yeah, I'll keep talking. You turn that one off. So you've got your bushy-tailed possums.
Yeah.
And then you've got your ringtails.
Right.
Now, what?
Are they both protected the same?
Well, no. They're protected, yes, but not the same, right? So you're allowed to catch a bushy-tailed possum.
Right.
But only if it's taken up residence in your roof.
Yep.
Or it's causing damage on your property.
Yep.
You're allowed to catch it only for the purpose of, you know, blocking the access on your roof.
Right.
But you've got to release it.
And you're not allowed to release it miles from home, are you?
Well, that's right. How far do you think you're allowed to go?
I thought it was very close.
Yeah, 50 metres.
Is that all?
Yeah, not 1 kilometre. Don't drive it down the road. Don't drive it 20 kilometres away.
Yeah.
50 metres. Because they're very territorial. And other ones will attack it if you release it into their area.
So is that with both
species? No, so only bushy tails. You're only allowed to catch the bushy tails.
Yeah.
For that specific reason. Yeah. Like, let's say it's to block the access to your roof because it's living in your roof. You've got to get it out of there.
Yeah.
But that's only the bushy tails you're allowed to catch. You're not allowed to catch the ringtails. You're not allowed to touch the ringtails.
So what happens if they get into your roof?
A bit of bad luck there. You can get a licensed person. So there are people that are licensed. They're allowed to come, pest controllers, that are allowed to come and catch them. But you've got to also with the, if you do catch a bushy tail, because you're trying to get it out of your roof, you've got to release it, but also you've got to release it at night, after dusk, you know, not during the day, because they're nocturnal animals. So you've got to only release it back into its active time.
We had an incident. This was many years ago. We were out, and one of my daughters was home, and she rang up. She said, "Dad, come home quick! Come home quick!" And this was before the days of the fan above your stove.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We had a sort of a chimney sort of thing.
Yes.
And he came in that, and he fell down.
He fell down out of the.
But he was frightened. But he still stayed with his head up the flue and his backside on the stove.
Oh.
Luckily, it was cold.
Yes, yes.
And this is at 11:30 on a Saturday night.
Oh, no.
And you've got no idea how much it costs to get a pest guy out at, he got to my place at 1:00 Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So if you're in any doubt, you should get a licensed pest controller to that can catch the possums. So ringtails, don't touch. Leave them alone. What is encouraged is...
So what happened, let me just ask you this. So say this was a ringtail that got into and he came down head first instead of tail first and got into my house.
You're not allowed to injure it, not allowed to harm it. You've got to somehow get it out without hurting it. It's tricky.
But you're not allowed to catch it.
Well, you're not supposed to.
You're not allowed to take it anywhere.
Well, you've got to call the pest controller. And who knows when they're coming, as you say. So, but look, what people are encouraged to do is buy a nesting box, a possum box.
Right.
Put that outside so that they stay in there rather than your roof. So that they don't want to, because they want dark, sheltered places.
Yeah.
So better to give them an alternative than to your roof or your chimney flue. So that's the idea, is encourage them. But, yeah, you're only allowed to take them 50 metres away, the bushy tail. If you catch a bushy tail, only 50 metres away.
And the ringtail.
And the ringtail, don't take it anyway. You shouldn't catch it at all.
Do we know why the difference between the two?
I think I'm not exactly sure why. That's what I read in the law. Yeah, so look it up on the website. There's a state government website that deals with this. So look it up.
We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Girls now. girl's night out. When the work is done, the girls go out to play. Girl's night out. Put on your dancing shoes. We'll chase the blues away. So if you see the girls out having fun, there's no doubt it's a girl's night out. Girls night out. Girls night out. When the work is done, the girls go out to play. Girls night out. Put on your dancing shoes. Chase the blues away. So if you see the girls out having fun, there's no doubt it's a girls night out. The girl's night out. There's no doubt it's a girl's night out. We're gonna twist and shout.
Listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, Colm, you want to talk about hard waste. I've just thought of a question I'd like to ask just before you tell us about the law. People put the hard waste out the front, and I think most places now you've got to book it, because I know there are certain areas up here where they still have their yearly one where you put it all out on the nature strip and people come. In a number of areas now you book it, and so you get your one collection, but you don't get it all together, and they send two trucks and they cart the stuff away. Now, once you've booked it, you get a sticker to say it's booked, and you must not add to it, and you can't take stuff away. What's the legal version of that? If people get, I'm not sure anyone's going to charge them, but particularly if someone come up and they say, oh, look, I see that, and it's mine. Now, the sticker says you're not allowed to take it.
Mm.
Is that the law, or is that just more the council saying we don't want you to take it?
Yeah, so we're in the realm of council bylaws here. Yep. So each council has their own rules around this, and they have their own enforcement officers as to whether they're going to enforce the rules.
Yep.
So yes, generally speaking, so we'll start with you start with the proposition that you own it, even when you put it on the nature strip for. Yep. Collection by the council,
yep.
It's still yours.
Right.
And you're only giving council permission to come and take it.
Right.
Or council's contractors. So the legal position starts in that way.
Yep.
It's yours until the council collect it. No one's meant to come and touch it.
Yep.
And now different councils are going to enforce that or not enforce that. So yep. A lot of councils will say, no, we encourage recycling. We want yep. people to grab it.
Yep.
As long as you don't leave a big mess. So if you...
that's what they do.
That's right. That's right. So if there's a nice, neat pile and you're yep. in one of those council areas where you're allowed to take things
yep.
Or they're not going to enforce, you know, try and stop you,
yep.
then you've got to make sure that you take it without spilling it onto the footpath or the road, you know, not making an obstruction for anyone else, and
yep.
keep it within, you know, how there's sort of size limits and space limits.
Yep.
So you've got to keep it within that. So if you're in that area... it's always encouraged. The best thing to do, if in doubt, knock on the door and
yep.
say, there's that thing there, can I take it?
Yep.
And then there's no doubt about
the
owner's now changed their mind, not giving it to council, now they're giving it to you.
So That's allowable, isn't it? Yes. Just because you put the sign on, you can't take it. You still own it.
That's right. It's still yours until the council come and take it. It's still yours.
Didn't know that.
But that's why somebody should really be asking you permission to take it.
Yep.
Now, I know that, like, it used to be, I'm not so sure now, but a lot of councils contracted this work out to collecting it.
Yep.
And the contractors were, you know, making money from, like, metal recycling, steel recycling, copper. You know, there's been a lot of people stealing copper, people collecting copper. So you'll get somebody in a van driving around trying to collect all the valuable stuff.
Yep.
Those councils generally, if they've got a contract with a collector, they're going to outlaw people rummaging around because they've got to make a profit. The contractors have got to make a profit by collecting that stuff. So, and again, that's why you really need to check with your local council as to whether you can go grab it. And as I say, the safest way is ask, knock on the door and ask if you can take it. If the owner gives permission to take it, then you can take it.
Because
they've still got the right. So, yeah, so that's how that works there. And as you say, some areas are booked. Other areas are once or twice a year, but generally, what I've said there applies. You should just double check with the owner, and then take it away.
All right, we'll take another quick break because first of all, we want to talk about gambling. So if you're please hang around, we'll talk about that, and then we've got a couple of things for you to take away and have a look at for next month.
Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, Con, you said you want to talk about gambling. I see that the federal government now are going to try and legislate when you're allowed to advertise and when you're not allowed to advertise and all that with gambling. So how do you think all that'll go?
Well, there's been restrictions in the past. Now, there's been long-delayed reforms, so there's more restrictions on, which is, like, I think that's important because, you know, the effect it has on young, impressionable people, you know, kids watching footy shouldn't be exposed to gambling odds. Yeah. We shouldn't be encouraging You know, like kids on their mobile phones. So we've got those social media laws,
yep.
But some of that covers gambling as well. We don't want under 16s on their phones addicted to gambling. So, or just even talking about odds on sports and things and placing bets.
Even on the footy, you can
place bets all the time. That's right. Yeah. So it's so the federal government's trying to as I say, bring in these long delayed. There were recommended. Reforms from years ago.
Yep.
They're trying to say they're bringing it in. As usual, there are those that say it doesn't go far enough. Yep. There are those that say it goes too far. I just found it interesting that there's this sort of combination of things affecting gambling at the moment. So there's the federal government planned laws, which I think they're trying to bring in for next month. But then at the same time, I was reading an ABC News article about reforms that have been announced in the Northern Territory. It has a gambling regulator up there.
Right.
And which is interesting, I think, according to the article, it says it only has 6 part-time staff. Mm. But what's interesting is 52 of the largest gambling companies, like the sports betting agencies or the gambling agencies, their company is based and registered in Northern Territory.
Because
why is that?
I was going to ask you why is that?
Well, according to the ABC News article, it says because of tax reasons. Now, because state governments and territory governments tax gambling revenues.
Yep.
So that could be one reason, tax revenues. But something I came across years ago, I was dealing with a matter where a betting agency allowed a customer to be given credit, giving credit to gamble. And when I was looking into this a few years ago, other states and territories have outlawed or banned giving credit for gambling purposes, except the Northern Territory. So these companies are all based in Northern Territory, regulated by the Northern Territory gambling regulator there, but they can ring you all across Australia. And because of the way we have our federation, when the constitution was brought in, you're not allowed to stop interstate trade. So you're not allowed to stop a Northern Territory company from operating in Victoria.
But they operate under the rules of the Northern Territory.
That's correct, right? So you can be here in Victoria being offered credit from your gambling company, your gambling agency based in Northern Territory. So, so I just found that interesting that we've got these reforms at the same time. You got the federal government with advertising gambling, the Northern Territory trying to reform its own regulator. With only part-time staff. So there's some question marks there. Yeah. The ABC News article raises some ethical issues as well. People owning resources whilst working for the gambling regulator. So, what do they call that? The pub test. So I don't know if that was in the past. Hopefully it's not still true. But, there's a lot around that issue.
Yep.
And as well, though, I think I spoke about it last month, the money laundering or anti-money laundering legislation as well. So these gambling companies have got to report all suspicious transactions.
Yep.
So they're supposed to know the source of people's incomes and how they're using, what money they're gambling with. But it's interesting when they, if they can offer credit for gambling, though, let's say they say to you, we'll give you $50,000 of credit, but it's not $50,000 you can spend at the shops. You can't go buy a car with it.
No, you've got to spend
it in their agency. So, if you spend it and lose it, you owe them $50,000. But you never saw $50,000. You never had $50,000. You just had a credit in your account for $50,000.
That's a bit hard.
So it makes me wonder, what's the real value of that credit?
I've got to take a quick break and we're going to come back with more because we've got some questions for you to come back next month with us, please. Come on.
My
is brilliant. My love is pure. I saw an angel of that, I'm sure. She smiled at me on the subway. She was with another man. But I won't lose no sleep on that, 'cause I've got a plan. You're beautiful. You're beautiful. You're beautiful, it's true. I saw your face in a crowded place, and I don't know what to do, 'cause I'll never be with you. Yes, she caught my eye as I walked.
Talking to Con from Hutchison Legal, and we've been talking all sorts of legal matters. And I should say, if you've got any questions, it's too late today. Either give me a ring or shoot an email to info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. Con will be back the same time next month, and we'll put the answers to him. Con, there's a couple of questions here. One of them I just thought of before, so I'll take that first. You were talking about when a person goes on for bail. There may be some of the reasons, and one of them was medical and various things. What's the legal responsibility on a prisoner who's been given a sentence? Not so much on the prisoner, on the system to make sure that they are looked after. Like, I know, say if they've got diabetes or something like that, then obviously they'll tell the judge and say, you know, my client's got this and that. And does he then make an order to that has to be treated? I'm not asking you now. Mm-hmm. Also, if he's it could be either sex or anybody, if they're in jail and they then contract, not so much a disease, but they get something wrong with them, what responsibility does the prison or the government have to that responsibility, to that prisoner?
Mm-hmm.
A prisoner's just sort of locked up and that's it. And I guess the prison's got to be very careful that prisoner's not trying to get themselves into a hospital or something where they think they can get away or they just don't want to be in hospital. So that's all about the medical treatment, mainly for just prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing, the questions that we did have, over the years, you've talked to us a lot about the Supreme Court and the County Court.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for the layperson, and I've had two or three questions about this, we want to know what the Supreme Court handles, what sort of cases they handle, what sort of sentences they can hand out. Now, I know you're going to say how long is a piece of string, because every crime is going to have its own minimum, maximum, no doubt. And the same with the county court. What sort of crimes do they handle, and what sort of sentences can they hand out?
Only crimes you want to talk about? You want me to look into crimes or civil civil jurisdiction as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything to do with those two courts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know your time's busy and all that, so we're not expecting you to spend hours on it, but I have had a couple of questions on that, because you sit here and talk about the courts and you know about them.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. and Mrs. Average out there, if they're lucky enough, never to have been involved with the courts, and I'm lucky to be one of those, we don't know what the courts actually do.
Sure.
Well, we know what they do, but we don't know, are there limits as to, you know?
Yep.
And I guess, and you'd probably know this one off the top of your head, just the magistrate's court. Because a magistrate, is there a limit on to how long he can give jail?
Because
I'm thinking, if you've got the Supreme, the county court, the Supreme Court, which one's first, Con? The lowest, the con?
The so, yes, yeah, so the magistrate's court's the lowest in the hierarchy.
Yep.
And then county, yeah, and then Supreme. Yes.
So each of those must have layers that they can't go past, I would have thought.
Yes, well, they have, that's right, they have different, what they call different lists, and yes, different jurisdictions, different limits to what they can deal with, and what punishments, or what types of crime, and I'll come back with some more detail.
Yeah, if you could, and then we'll get off this subject, because I don't want to answer it now. But the other thing is too, can a med, and I'll get you to answer this now, because I don't want to waste all your time doing some work, If you go to the magistrate's court for some sort of crime, we're talking crimes here.
Yes.
If I don't like that, the outcome, do I appeal to the magistrate's court, or do I have to appeal to the county court? Or, and if I don't like the decision in the county court, do I have to go to the Supreme Court? Like, can their own jurisdiction hear an appeal, or do you have to go each time up?
Ooh, I'm going to have to say I don't know this off the top of my head.
Oh, right.
I'm sure you can appeal. You can appeal usually most things. So for crimes, the magistrate's court deals with what's called summary offences. So these are the lower level crimes.
Yep.
So you know they issue fines and penalties. I don't think they're generally locking you away for very long. They deal, and most of the time, as I say, there isn't room in the jails, so they're trying to avoid putting people away. They're trying to find as many alternatives to that as they can. So the magistrate's court, they're always trying to find punishments that are suitable, because without trying to put you in jail if it can be avoided. So, you'd be able to appeal if it's gone horribly wrong.
But I must say to you, Con, and I know that you're talking from legal process. Position, but I've got to say that from the public's perception, a lot of them think a lot more should be going to jail.
Yeah, there's just not room for them. I think the government's trying to build more, but you just can't put everyone away. Everyone that the police catch, they can't just lock them up because there literally isn't the facilities to hold them all. And and as I say, for summary offences, which are the lower level crimes, there's still. Just because the police have charged doesn't mean it's proven. So everyone's presumed innocent until proven guilty, and you've got to work your way through the system until that's proven.
Con, we've still got two or three minutes, so I just want to ask you this. And this may be an unfair question because you're a lawyer in Victoria. Is it right that in America the presumption is that you're guilty and you have to prove yourself innocent rather than you're innocent and have to be proved guilty?
Oh, I'm not aware of that. No. Yeah. I don't know about that.
I have a feeling in the back of my mind.
Certain crimes, even in Australia, certain legislation puts what's called the onus of proof. It can reverse the onus of proof. Okay. So usually for most things, the prosecutor or the plaintiff in a civil matter has the onus of proving that the thing has happened.
Yeah.
But a number of different pieces of law reverse that onus and say you've got to prove you didn't do the thing, or you've got to.
Is that in criminal law or what sort of
law? So something like employment law, they'll say, you know, you're prohibited from terminating an employment on certain grounds,
right.
But the employer has to prove that none of those grounds were the reason for the dismissal or for the termination. So the employer has the onus of proving that they terminated for some reason that wasn't a prohibited reason. So so the onus is reversed in those kind of matters. So
can I just ask you this, though? In criminal law, is it always that you're innocent and they have to prove you're guilty?
Yeah, well, there are some things called what they call strict liability offences.
Right.
And that's where if you only have to show certain things happened,
yep,
then you're guilty because it's what's called strict liability.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what your intention was. It doesn't matter, you know, about motive or, you know, that kind of thing. None of that comes into play in those what's called strict liability offences. So, right. So you are sort of presumed guilty in that sense. If the very basic facts are shown,
yep,
that's it. You're done. There's no defence. Yeah. So but they try and not create too many strict liability offences because it's so it can be unfair, I suppose, in a way.
Mm. Yeah, because you are in fact really saying the person's guilty without them.
Yeah, without looking at surrounding circumstances, without if there's any what you call justifications for what they was done.
Yeah.
So it just has to. You just have to prove that this happened. Yeah. This happened. This happened. Guilty.
And that's guilty.
Yeah.
So, in a case like that, it's hardly worthwhile. Well, putting up a defence, is it? Or?
Well, usually you're just arguing over what should the punishment be.
Is it?
Yeah.
So you don't normally sort of. Would you hear the whole case?
I mean, you try and say those things didn't happen,
yep,
if you can. But if it's obvious those things happened, the elements of the strict liability offence, if A, B, and C have happened, you're then just arguing over what should the punishment be.
Is there many offences like that, Con? Just off the top of your head?
They are meant to be rare. They're not meant to be across the board because because they can operate, as I say, harshly. So usually people are meant to have an opportunity to argue and defend, and as I say, have intentions brought into account.
I guess in a case like that wouldn't last long, would it? Like you wouldn't be in a court for weeks on end because it's only a case of arguing. Well, I didn't do this or I didn't do that.
Yep,
and I'm sure you're going to tell me this is right, but I'm going to ask you because we're just about out of time. Is not an excuse in the law, is it?
Ignorance is no excuse.
That's
right.
A word.
Yes, ignorance is no excuse. The laws are there whether you know them or not.
So it's up to us, to whatever we're doing, to make sure that what we're doing is legal because...
That's right.
You can't just say, well, I didn't realise
that. That's right. If you've got a ring-tailed possum in a possum trap, you can't say you didn't know. And if you've listened to today's program, you definitely didn't. You can't say you didn't know. So that's, you know, that's the thing. Just because you don't know doesn't mean it's not a crime or not an offence.
Well, otherwise you'd be having everybody...
Yeah.
Claude, just one quick question, and then I've got to let you go. Watches.
Mm-hmm.
The watch you wear.
Yeah.
You can get emails, you can get texts on.
Mm.
What's your take on looking at them when you're sitting at a set of lights?
Oh, I'd have to, as in whether I think you should.
Yeah.
No, I don't think you should.
Yeah.
It's any distractions. I have to say, I've observed in the past, I thought everyone used to drive 10 kilometres over the limit.
Yep.
Now they're driving 10 kilometres under the limit. I've got no idea why. I keep coming across people, they're driving along at 50 and 60 zones, 60 and 70 zones, and I'm like, are they looking at the entertainment system? Are they looking at their watch? Are they looking at... There's just so many distractions now, and people have just sort of forgotten. Actually concentrate on the road and the traffic and, you know, like, be considerate of other cars, because people are just doing all sorts of weird stuff, turning, you know, they're looking at their Google Maps or whatever it is, their Apple Map, whatever. And they're turning right from the left lane. They're in the left lane, and all of a sudden they go across three lanes of traffic to go into a right turn lane. You're like, what are they doing, these people? So anyway, I would say avoid all distractions. Just put 99.1 Yarra Valley FM on the radio and enjoy and drive.
Thanks, good. Thanks, Con, for your time. We look forward to seeing you next month.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, mate.